Support for the Alaska Live series of live music and conversation on KUAC is made possible by a grant from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, architecture and engineering for the new frontier. Well, good afternoon. I'm your Alaska Live host, Lori Neufeld, Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater Executive Director. Tom Ravenel joins me for today's Alaska Almost Live. I'm here at the KUAC studios, and Tom, you're there talking to me over your phone as we do these days.
Yes, yep, as it's become our new normal.
And, well, this is so exciting that you you and I were planning on doing this Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater As You Like It as a radio drama from the very first. This was never going to be on stage. This was always going to be a radio drama.
Exactly. Yeah, we had talked about doing a live reading with a Foley artist and then recording it afterwards and then maybe putting it on our website after that. But it was never intended to be even a recorded thing for KUAC and Alaska Live. And then all of a sudden, this craziness hit. And, you know, I remember when the state mandate hit, I thought, well, it happened right before we went into rehearsals. So I thought, well, we'll start the first week and we'll do it virtually through a virtual meeting room. And then, you know, by then, we'll be able to meet each other and start rehearsing in person. And then, you know, after a couple of days, I realized that's not the reality that we're in now.
Oh, no, so, things happened so quickly. It was,
yeah.
Oh, we can gather with, you know, 10 people or less maybe. And now, no, you stay at home unless you absolutely have to go out.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's what we did. We just stayed on this virtual platform and we recorded the whole thing through phones and computers and, you know, as any way we could. But I haven't met my cast. I've only met them virtually. In fact, the musician, Brian Witten, I haven't even seen him. I exchanged a couple of emails and he did his own thing and sent it through email, the songs, and we edited in that way. And it's been crazy.
Oh, Brian is great. He has done stuff for Alaska Live and KUAC TV, and he's really great. And so I'm so glad you have him on board for As You Like It with Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater that we're going to enjoy here in a bit here on KUAC.
Yeah, he's awesome. And he's such a good sport, too. And he's strong and gentle soul at the same time. Yeah, he's a great person.
Why don't we jump into, let's say, the director's notes, you know, what we might pick up in the playbill and why you chose this one, Tom?
Well, I chose this play because I was toiling with a couple of ideas. And then, you know, I realized that I think obviously a comedy would play better in the springtime. And we're coming out of the winter. And now a comedy plays even better. You know, basically a romantic comedy plays even better with the situation that we're in. So also I thought it would be interesting that if As You Like It has either the most or second most songs in the play, and that we could incorporate that as well. And I thought that would be very interesting to have actors and a musician and a live reading the way it was supposed to be at the beginning brought together in that way. And I also felt like that this is a version or this, sorry, excuse me, this play As You Like It could be cut down to that hour and 45 minute slot and really retain just about everything that there is in it. So it just kind of fit the mold for me. And I also picked it because this summer we're going to be doing Twelfth Night. And that is another gender swapping lead heroine character.
Is Twelfth Night also a comedy?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're similar in a way. So I thought it might be nice to warm the community up for Twelfth Night with As You Like It.
You're great. We are totally looking forward to this summer's Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater. We hope we can all get together and maybe sit a little bit farther apart, but at least be in the same space together outdoors.
Yeah, that would be great. I sent out a letter about, I don't think it was a week ago or so, to a bunch of, you know, through our list. I sent out an e-blast and And at the end of it, and it was very true, is like, if we see an audience across the stage, if we're up there acting and we have people there to enjoy it this summer, that will mean that we are all out of this mess and it will be a very joyous time. And I'm hoping that is the case.
I just got chills thinking about it. Literally just got chills thinking about it. Tell me about your cast, too. You've got an all-star cast with some folks that I've seen on your stage before, with Bruce Rogers and Jared Olin. He's one of my favorites. Flynn Ludington, Alan Hayden. Oh, my goodness. There's just so many good ones here.
Yeah, and there's Alex Bangle. We talked about Brian Witten, who's done the music for the production. Luke Williams and Jared Olin are UAF students, and unfortunately they got, the Pride and Prejudice was cut, so they were able to join us for this and get to still do some artistic acting work, even though their play has been postponed for right now. Nick Napa, he's a great reader and a really big fan of Shakespeare and poetry and literature. And then Lauren Michoud, she played Macduff last year in Macbeth, and she's a great actress. We're very lucky to have all these people. And then, as you said, Alan Hayden, who has just one of the best voices out there. So it's all come together pretty well.
And they were all game for this video conference, As You Like It, Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater radio drama.
They were. I mean, they were game from the beginning, and then they were just, everything changed. I mean, it just kept changing, and they were all just so gung-ho about it. And a part of it, I think, we're all looking for something to do while we're sitting at home waiting. But it was just you couldn't have asked for a better attitude from all of them. There was never a problem. There was no drama within the drama. There was none of that. It was just, yep, whatever works, whatever you need, whatever we need to do to make this happen. Because all of a sudden it became more than just, well, we're adding programming to Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater. Now it became kind of like, well, this is more important. This is more of a necessity to do for our local community, to provide some kind of entertainment for them while we're all sitting at home. So it became not just a fun activity and a production we're putting on. It almost became a necessity. I like to say that we are part of the necessary businesses or essential business. Because we're providing this, and we went through different ways. They went through, well, we're going to record. We're only going to meet in the office in groups of four and wear gloves and have masks and record.
That's
that
not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. Yeah. It was just like, we tried every little way. And then it was like, all right, the reality is we're going to be recording over phones and computers and this and that. So some of the voices sound just a little off. But you know, that's the nature of it. And I think, as I was telling you, it's this recording is almost like a time capsule, that this is how we had to record this particular play this year because of this pandemic.
I know. So we're about to jump in to this video conference recording of As You Like It, and it has sound effects and music and all of our actors that we hear. Set us up. I know that we hear the sound of spring right off the bat. Set us up. What are we going to see in scene one of act one?
So what happens in the first act? So the play opens, as you said, with a bit of music, light music, and the birds chirping, and sets us into this orchard where Orlando, one of the title characters, is complaining to one of his father's servants, Adam, about Orlando's brother, Oliver, who has kept him down, who has kept him from his rights that he is supposed to be awarded from his father's will, his father who has passed away. And so he's talking to Adam about that. And in that discussion, he runs into Oliver, and the two of them have a confrontation. And they set the rest of the play up from there.
Well, here is As You Like It, Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater radio drama on KUAC's Alaska Almost Live.
As I remember, Adam, it was upon this fashion, bequeathed me by will, but for 1,000 crowns, and as thou sayest, charged my brother on his blessing to breed me well. And there begins my sadness. My brother Jakes, he keeps at school, and report speaks goldenly of his profit. For my part, he keeps me rustically at home. His horses are bred better. But I, his brother, gain nothing besides this, nothing that he so plentifully gives me. The something that nature gave me, his countenance seems to take from me. He lets me feed with his hinds, bars me the place of a brother, and as much as in him lies, mines my gentility with my education. This is it, Adam, that grieves me. And the spirit of my father, which I think is within me, begins to mutiny against this servitude. I will no longer endure it, though yet I know no wise remedy how to avoid it.
Yonder comes my master, your brother.
Go apart, Adam, and thou shalt hear how he will shake me up.
Now, sir, what make you here?
Nothing. I am not taught to make anything.
What mar you then, sir?
Marry, sir, I am helping you to mar that which God made, a poor, unworthy brother of yours with idleness.
Marry, sir, be better employed, and be not a while.
Will I keep your hogs and eat husks with them? What prodigal portion have I spent that I should come to such penury?
Know you where you are, sir?
Oh, sir, very well, here in your orchard.
Know you before whom, sir?
Aye, better than him I am before knows me. I know you are my eldest brother, and in the gentle condition of blood you should so know me. I have as much of my father in me as you, albeit I confess your coming before me is nearer to his reverence.
What, boy?
Come, come, elder brother, you are too young in this.
Wilt thou lay hands on me, villain?
I am no villain. I am the youngest son of Sir Roland de Bois. He was my father, and he is thrice a villain that says such a father begot villains. Wert thou not my brother, I would not take this hand from thy throat till this other had pulled out thy tongue for saying so.
Sweet masters, be patient. For your father's remembrance, be at accord.
Let me go, I say.
I will not till I please. You shall hear me. My father charged you in his will to give me good education. You have trained me like a peasant. Obscuring and hiding from me all gentlemanlike qualities, the spirit of my father grows strong in me, and I will no longer endure it. Therefore allow me such exercises as may become a gentleman, or give me the poorer lottery my father left me by testament. With that I will go buy my fortunes.
And what wilt thou do? Beg when that is spent? Well, sir, get you in. I will not long be troubled with you. You shall have some part of your will. I pray you leave me.
I will no further offend you than becomes me for my good.
Get you with them, you old dog.
Is old dog my reward? Most true, I have lost my teeth in your service. God be with my old master. He would not have spoke such a word.
Is it even so? Begin you to grow upon me. I will physic your rankness and yet give no 1,000 crowns neither. Hola! Dennis!
Calls your worship.
Was not Charles, the Duke's wrestler, here to speak with me?
So please you, he is here at the door and importunes access to you.
Call him in. 'Twill be a good way, and tomorrow the wrestling is.
Good morrow to your worship.
Good Monsieur Charles, what's the new news at the new court?
There's no news at the court, sir, but the old news. That is, the old Duke is banished by his younger brother, the new Duke.
Where will the old Duke live?
They say he is already in the Forest of Arden. They say many young gentlemen flock to him every day and fleet the time carelessly as they did in the Golden World.
What? You wrestle tomorrow before the new Duke?
Marry, do I, sir. And I came to acquaint you with a matter. I am given, sir, secretly to understand that your younger brother, Orlando, hath a disposition to come in disguised against me to try a fall. Tomorrow, sir, I wrestle for my credit, and he that scapes me without some broken limbs shall acquit him well. Therefore, out of my love to you, I came hither to acquaint you withal, that either you might stay him from his intentment or brook such disgrace well as he shall run into, in that it is a thing of his own search and altogether against my will.
Charles, I thank thee for thy love to me, which thou shalt find I most kindly requite. I'll tell thee, Charles, it is the stubbornest young fellow of France, full of ambition, an envious emulator of every man's good parts, a secret and villainous contriver against me, his natural brother. Therefore, use thy discretion. I had as lief thou didst break his neck as his finger, and thou wert best look to it, for, I assure thee, and almost with tears I speak it, there is not one so young and so villainous this day living.
I am heartily glad I came hither to you. If he come tomorrow, I'll give him his payment. If ever he go alone again, I'll never wrestle for prize more. And so God keep your worship.
Farewell, good Charles. Now will I stir the skinster. I hope I shall see an end to him. For my soul, yet I know not why, hates nothing more than he.
I prithee, Rosalind, sweet, my cuz, be merry.
Dear Celia, I show more mirth than I am mistress of, and would you yet I were merrier? Unless you could teach me to forget a banished father, you must not learn me how to remember any extraordinary pleasure.
Herein I see thou lovest me not, with the full weight that I love thee. If my uncle, thy banished father, had banished thy uncle, the duke, my father, so thou hadst been still with me, I could have taught my love to take thy father for mine. So wouldst thou, if the truth of thy love to me were so righteously tempered as mine is to thee.
Well, I will forget the condition of my estate to rejoice in yours.
You know my father hath no child but I, nor none is like to have. And truly, when he dies, thou shalt be his heir. For what he hath taken away from thy father perforce, I will render thee again in affection. By mine honor, I will. And when I break that oath, let me turn monster. Therefore, my sweet Rose, my dear Rose, be merry.
From henceforth, I will, cuz.
How now, wit? Whither wander you?
Mistress, you must come away to your father.
Were you made the messenger?
No, by mine honor, but I was bid to come for you.
Where learned you that oath, fool?
Of a certain knight that swore by his honor they were good pancakes, and swore by his honor the mustard was not. Now I'll stand to it. The pancakes were not, and the mustard was good, and yet was not the knight forsworn.
How prove you that, in the great heap of your knowledge?
Aye, marry. Now unmuzzle your wisdom.
Stand you both forth now, stroke your chins, and swear by your beards that I am a knave.
By our beards, if we had them, thou art.
By my knavery, if I had it, then I were. But if you swear by that that is not, you are not forsworn. No more was this knight swearing by his honor, for he never had any.
Hmm.
Or if he had, he had sworn it away before ever he saw those pancakes or that mustard.
Here comes Monsieur Le Beau,
with his mouth full of news,
which he will put on us as pigeons feed their young.
Then shall we be news-crammed.
All the better! We shall be more marketable! Bonjour, Monsieur Le Beau. What's the news?
Fair princess, you have lost much good sport. I would have told you of good wrestling, which you have lost the sight of.
You tell us the manner of the wrestling.
I will tell you the beginning, and if it please your ladyships, you may see the end. For the best is yet to do, and here, where you are, they are coming to perform it.
Well, the beginning, that is dead and buried.
There comes an old man and his three sons.
I could match this beginning with an old tale.
Three proper young men of excellent growth and presence. The eldest of the three wrestled with Charles, the Duke's wrestler, which Charles in a moment threw and broke three of his ribs, that there is little hope of life in him. So he served the second, and so the third. Yonder they lie.
But what is the sport, monsieur, that the ladies have lost?
Why, this that I speak of.
Thus men may grow wiser every day. It is the first time that ever I heard breaking of ribs was sport for ladies.
Or I promise thee.
Shall we see this wrestling, cousin?
You must, if you stay here, for here is the place appointed for the wrestling, and they are ready to perform it.
Yonder shore they are coming. Let us now stay and see it.
Come on, since the youth will not be entreated, his own peril and his forwardness.
Is yonder the man?
Even he, madam.
Alas, he is too young. Yet he looks successfully.
How now, daughter and cousin, are you crept hither to see the wrestling?
Aye, my liege. So please you give us leave.
You will take little delight in it, I can tell you. There is such odds in the man.
Young man, Have you challenged Charles the Wrestler?
No, fair princess. He is the general challenger. I come but in, as others do, to try with him the strength of my youth.
Young gentlemen, your spirits are too bold for your years. You have seen cruel proof of this man's strength. We pray you, for your own sake, to embrace your own safety and give over this attempt.
Do, young sir.
I beseech you, let your fair eyes and gentle wishes go with me to my trial, wherein, if I be foiled, there is but one shamed that was never gracious. If killed, but one dead that was willing to be so. I shall do my friends no wrong, for I have none to lament me. The world no injury, for in it I have nothing.
The little strength that I have, I would it were with you.
And mine, to eke out hers.
Come, where is this young gallant that is so desirous to lie with his mother earth?
And you mean to mock me after? You should not have mocked me before. But come your ways.
Now, Hercules, be thy speed, young man.
I would I were invisible to catch the strong fellow by the leg.
Excellent, young man.
If I had a thunderbolt in mine eye, I could tell you who shut down.
No more.
Yes, I beseech your grace. I am not yet well breathed.
How dost thou, Charles?
He cannot speak, my lord.
Oh, bear him away. What is thy name, young man?
Orlando, my liege, the youngest son of Sir Roland de Bois.
I would thou hadst been son to some man else. The world esteemed thy father honorable, but I did find him still mine enemy. Thou shouldst have better pleased me with this deed, hadst thou descended from another house. But fare thee well, thou art a gallant youth. I would thou hadst told me of another father.
Were I my father, cuz, would I do this?
I am more proud to be Sir Roland's son, his youngest son, and would not change that calling to be adopted heir to Frederick.
My father loved Sir Roland as his soul.
Gentle cousin, let us go thank him and encourage him. My father's rough and envious disposition sticks me at heart. Sir, you have well deserved. If you do keep your promises in love, but justly, as you have exceeded all promise, your mistress shall be happy.
Gentlemen, wear this for me. One out of suits with fortune that could give more, but that her hand lacks means. Shall we go, cuz?
Aye. Fare you well, fair gentlemen.
Can I not say I thank you?
He calls us back. My pride fell with my fortunes. I'll ask him what he would. Did you call, sir? Sir, you have wrestled well and overthrown more than your enemies.
Will you go, cuz?
Have with you. Fare you well.
What passion hangs these weights upon my tongue? I cannot speak to her, yet she urged conference. Oh, poor Orlando, thou art overthrown.
Good sir, I do in friendship counsel you to leave this place. Albeit you have deserved high commendation, true applause and love, yet such is now the Duke's condition that he misconstrues all that you have done.
I thank you, sir, and pray you tell me this. Which of the two was daughter of the Duke that here was at the wrestling?
Neither is daughter, if we judge by manners. But yet indeed the lesser is his daughter. The other is daughter to the banished Duke. But I can tell you that of late this Duke hath taken this pleasure against his gentle niece, grounded upon no other argument but that the people praise her for her virtues and pity her for her good father's sake. And, on my life, his malice against the lady will suddenly break forth. Sir, fare you well.
I rest much bounden to you. Fare you well. Thus must I from the smoke into the smother, from tyrant duke unto a tyrant brother. But heavenly Rosalind!
Why, cousin? Why, Rosalind? Cupid, have mercy. Not a word.
Not one to throw at a dog.
But is all this for your father?
No. Some of it is for my child's father. Oh, how full of briars is this working day world.
Come, come, wrestle with thy affection.
Oh, they take the part of a better wrestler than myself.
Is it possible, on such a sudden, you should fall into so strong a liking with old Sir Roland's youngest son?
The Duke, my father, loved his father dearly.
Doth it therefore ensue that you should love his son dearly? By that kind of chase, I should hate him, for my father hated his father dearly, yet I hate not Orlando.
Look, here comes the Duke,
with his eyes full of anger.
Mistress, dispatch you with your safest haste and get you from our court.
Me, uncle?
You, cousin. Within these 10 days, if thou be'st found so near our public court as 20 miles, thou diest for it.
I do beseech your grace. Let me the knowledge of my fault bear with me. Never so much as in a thought unborn did I offend your highness.
Thou art thy father's daughter. There's enough.
So was I when your highness took his dukedom. So was I when your highness banished him. Treason is not inherited, my lord. Or if we did derive it from our friends, what's that to me? My father was no traitor. Then, good my liege, mistake me not so much to think my poverty is treacherous.
Dear sovereign, hear me speak.
Aye, Celia, we stayed her for your sake, else she had with her father ranged along.
If she be a traitor, why so am I.
Thou art a fool. She robs thee of thy name, and thou wilt show more bright and seem more virtuous when she is gone. Then open not thy lips. Firm and irrevocable is my doom, which I have passed upon her. She is banished.
Pronounce that sentence then on me, my liege. I cannot live out of her company.
You are a fool. You, niece, provide yourself. If you outstay the time, upon mine honor, and in the greatness of my word, you die.
Oh, my poor Rosalind, whither wilt thou go? Wilt thou change, fathers? I will give thee mine. I charge thee, be not thou more grieved than I am.
I have more cause.
Thou hast not, cousin. Prithee, be cheerful. Knowest thou not the Duke hath banished me, his daughter?
That he hath not.
No, hath not. Rosalind lacks then the love that teacheth thee that thou and I am one. Shall we be sundered? Shall we part, sweet girl? No, let my father seek another heir. For by this heaven, now it our sorrows pale. Say what thou canst, I'll go along with thee.
Why? Whither shall we go?
To seek my uncle in the forest of Arden.
Alas, what danger will it be to us maids as we are to travel forth so far? Beauty provoketh thieves sooner than gold.
I'll put myself in poor and mean attire. The like do you. So shall we pass along and never stir assailants.
Were it not better, because I am more than common tall, that I did suit me all points like a man? A gallant kirtle axe upon my thigh, a boar spear in my hand, and in my heart, lie there what hidden woman's fear there will, we'll have a swashing and a martial outside, as many other mannish cowards have that do outface it with their semblances.
What shall I call thee when thou art a man?
I'll have no worse a name than Jove's own page, and therefore, look, you call me Ganymede. But what will you be called?
Something that hath a reference to my state. No longer Celia, but Aliena.
But, cousin, what if we essayed to steal the clownish fool out of your father's court? Would he not be a comfort to our travel?
He'll go along o'er the wide world with me. Leave me to woo him. Let's away. Now go we in content, to liberty and not to banishment.
Now, my co-mates and brothers in exile, hath not old custom made this life more sweet than that of painted pomp? Are not these woods more free from peril than the envious court? Here feel we but the penalty of Adam, the season's difference, as the icy fang and churlish chiding of the winter's wind, which, when it bites and blows upon my body, even till I shrink with cold, I smile and say, this is no flattery, these are counselors that feelingly persuade me what I am. Sweet are the uses of adversity. And this our life, exempt from public haunt, finds tongues in trees, books in the running brooks, sermons in stones, and good in everything. I would not change it.
Happy is your grace that can
translate the stubbornness of fortune into so quiet and so sweet a style.
Oh, come, shall we go and kill us venison? And yet it irks me, the poor dappled fools, being native burghers of this desert city, should in their own confines with forked heads have their round haunches gored.
Indeed, my lord, the melancholy Jaques grieves at that, and in that kind swears ye do more usurp than doth your brother that hath banished you. Today my lord of Amiens and myself did steal behind him as he lay along under an oak whose antique root peeps out upon the brook that brawls along the wood, to which place a poor sequestered stag, that from the hunter's aim had taken a hurt, did come to languish, and indeed, my lord, the wretched animal heaved forth such groans that their discharge did stretch his leathern coat.
But what said Jaques? Did he not moralize this spectacle?
Oh, yes, into a thousand similes, anon a careless herd. Full of the pasture, jumps along by him, and never stays to greet him. Aye, quoth Jaques, sweep on, you fat and greasy citizens! 'Tis just the fashion! Wherefore do you look upon that poor and broken bankrupt there? Thus more invectively he pierceth through the body of the country, city, court, yea, and of this our life, swearing that we are mere usurpers, tyrants, and what's worse, to fright the animals and to kill them up in their assigned and native dwelling place.
And did you leave him in this contemplation?
We did, my lord, weeping and commenting upon the sobbing deer.
Show me the place. I love to cope him in these sullen fits, for then he's full of matter.
I'll bring you to him straight.
Who's there?
But my young master, oh, my gentle master, oh, my sweet master, oh, you memory of old Sir Roland, why, what make you here? Why would you be so fond to overcome the bonny prizer of the humorous duke? Your praise has come too swiftly home before you.
Why, what's the matter?
Oh, unhappy youth, your brother, no. No, brother, this night he means to burn the lodging where you used to lie, and you within it. If he fail of that, he will have other means to cut you off. I overheard him in his practices. This is no place. This house is but a butchery. Abhor it. Fear it. Do not enter it.
Why, whither, Adam, wouldst thou have me go?
No matter whither. So you come not here.
What? Wouldst thou have me go and beg my food? Or with a base and boisterous sword enforce a thievish living on the common road? This I must do, or know not what to do. I rather will subject me to the malice of a diverted blood and bloody brother.
But do not so. I have 500 crowns, the thrifty hire I saved under your father. Be comfort to my age. Here is the gold, and all this I give you. Let me be your servant. Though I look old, yet I am strong and lusty. I'll do the service of a younger man in all your business and necessities.
Oh, good old man. We'll go along together, and ere we have thy youthful wages spent, we'll light upon some settled low content.
Master, go on, and I will follow thee to the last gasp with truth and loyalty. From 17 years till now, almost 80, here lived I, but now live here no more.
Oh, Jupiter, how weary are my spirits!
I care not for my spirits, if my legs were not weary!
I could find it in my heart to disgrace my man's apparel and to cry like a woman.
I pray you bear with me. I cannot go no further.
For my part, I'd rather bear with you than bear you.
Well, this is the forest of Arden.
Aye, now am I in Arden. The more fool I. When I was at home, I was in a better place. But travelers must be content.
Aye, be so good, Touchstone. Look you, who comes here? A young man and an old in solemn talk.
That is the way to make her scorn you still.
Oh, Corin, that thou knewest how I do love her.
I'd hardly guess, for I have loved ere now.
No, Corin, being old thou canst not guess, though in thy youth thou wast as true a lover as ever sighed upon a midnight pillow. But if thy love were ever like to mine, as sure I think did never man love so, how many actions most ridiculous hast thou been drawn to by thy fantasy?
Into 1,000 that I have forgotten. That I have forgotten.
Oh, thou didst then ne'er love so heartily. If thou rememberest not the slightest folly that ever love did make thee run into, thou hast not loved. Or if thou hast not sat as I do now, wearying thy hair in thy mistress's praise, thou hast not loved. Or if thou hast not broke from company abruptly, as my passion now makes me, thou hast not loved. Oh, Phoebe! Phoebe! Phoebe!
Alas! Poor shepherd, searching of thy wound, I have by hard adventure found mine own.
And I mine.
I pray you, one of you question young man if he for gold will give us me food. I faint almost to death.
Holla, you clown!
Peace, fool. He's not thy kinsman.
Who calls?
Your betters, sir.
Else are they very wretched.
Peace, I say. Good even to you, friend.
And to you, gentle sir, and to you all.
I prithee, shepherd, if that lover gold can in this desert place buy entertainment, bring us where we may rest ourselves and feed. Here's a young maid, with travel much oppressed, and faints for succor.
Fair sir, I pity her, and wish for her sake more than for mine own my fortunes were more able to relieve her. But I am shepherd to another man, and do not shear the fleeces that I graze. My master is of a churlish disposition, and little recks to find the way to heaven by doing deeds of hospitality. Besides, his coat, his flocks, and bounds of feed are now on sale, and at our sheepcote now, by reason of his absence, there is nothing that you will feed on. But what is, come see, and in my voice most welcome shall you be.
I pray thee, if it stand with honesty, buy thou the cottage, pasture, and the flock, and thou shalt have to pay for it of us.
And we will mend thy wages. I like this place. And willingly could waste my time in it.
Assuredly, the thing is to be sold. Go with me. If you like upon report the soil, the profit, and this kind of life, I will your very faithful feeder be, and buy it with your gold right suddenly.
Under the greenwood tree, who loves to lie with me? And turn his merry note unto the sweet bird's throat. Come hither, come hither, come hither, here shall he see no enemy but winter and
will make you melancholy, Monsieur Jacques.
I thank it. More, I prithee, more. I can suck melancholy out of a song as a weasel sucks eggs. More, I prithee, more.
My voice is ragged. I know I cannot please you.
I do not desire you to please me. I do desire you to sing. Come, more, another stanza. Call you an stanzos?
What you will, Monsieur Jacques.
Nay, I care not for their names. They owe me nothing. Will you sing?
More at your request than to please you.
Well, then, if ever I thank any man, I'll thank you. Come, sing, and you who will not, hold your tongues.
Well, I'll end the song. Sirs, cover the while. The Duke will drink under this tree. He hath been all this day to look you.
And I have been all this day to avoid him. He is too disputable for my company. I think of as many things as he, but I give heaven thanks and make no boast of them. Come, warble, come.
Who doth ambition shine and loves to live in the sun, seeking the food he eats and pleased with what he gets? Come hither, come hither, come hither, here shall he see. No enemy but winter and rough weather.
I'll give you a verse to this note that I made yesterday in despite of my invention.
And I'll sing it.
Thus it goes. If it do come to pass that any man turn ass, leaving his wealth and ease, a stubborn will to please Duke Dame, Duke Dame, Duke Dame. Here shall he see gross fools as he, and if he will come to me.
What's that, Duke Dame?
'Tis a Greek invocation to call fools into a circle.
Oh.
I'll go sleep if I can. If I cannot, I'll rail against all the firstborn of Egypt.
And I'll go seek the Duke. His banquet is prepared.
Dear master, I can go no further. Oh, I die for food. Here lie I down and measure out my grave. Farewell, kind master.
Why, how now, Adam? No greater heart in thee. Live a little, comfort a little, cheer thyself a little. If this uncouth forest yield anything savage, I will either be food for it or bring it for food to thee. For my sake, be comfortable. Hold death a while at the arm's end. I will here be with thee presently. And if I bring thee not something to eat, I will give thee leave to die. Come, I will bear thee to some shelter, and thou shalt not die for lack of a dinner if there live anything in this desert. Cheerly, good Adam.
I think he be transformed into a beast, for I can nowhere find him like a man.
My lord, he is but even now gone hence.
Well, go, seek him out. Tell him I would speak with him.
He saves my labor by his own approach.
Why, how now, monsieur? What a life is this, that your poor friends must woo your company? What, you look merrily?
A fool, a fool. I met a fool in the forest, a motley fool, a miserable world. As I do live by food, I met a fool who laid him down and basked him in the sun and railed on Lady Fortune in good terms, in good set terms, and yet a motley fool. Good morrow, fool, quoth I. Now, sir, quoth he, call me not fool till heaven has sent me fortune. And then he drew a dial from his poke, and looking on it with lackluster eyes, says very wisely, it is 10 o'clock. Thus we may see, quoth he, how the world wags. 'Tis but an hour ago since it was 9, and after 1 hour more 'twill be 11. And so from hour to hour we write and write, and then from hour to hour we rot and rot, and thereby hangs a tale. When I did hear the motley fool thus moral on the time, my lungs began to crawl, my throat to clear. That fool should be so deep contemplative.
What fool is this?
A worthy fool, one that has been a courtier, and says, if ladies be but young and fair, they have the gift to know it. And in his brain, which is as dry as the remainder biscuit after a voyage, he has strange places crammed with observation, the which events with mangled form. Oh, that I were a fool! I am ambitious for a motley coat.
Oh, thou shalt have one.
It is my only suit, provided that you weed your better judgments of all opinion that grows rank in them that I am wise. I must have liberty with all, as large a charter as the wind to blow on whom I plea for so fools hath. Invest me in my motley. Give me leave to speak my mind, and I will through and through cleanse the foul body of the infected world, if they will patiently receive my medicine.
Fie on thee, I can tell thee what thou wouldst do.
What? For a counter, would I do but good?
Most mischievous foul sin, and chiding sin. For thou thyself hast been a libertine, sensual as the brutish sting itself, and all embossed sores and headed evils that thou with license of free foot hast caught, wouldst thou disgorge into the general world.
Why? What is he of basest function that says his bravery is not of my cost? Thinking that I mean him, but therein suits his folly to the metal of my speech. There, then. How, then? What, then? Let me see wherein my tongue hath wronged him. If it do him right, then he hath wronged himself. If he be free, why, then my taxing like a wild goose flies unclaimed of any man. But who comes here?
Forbear and eat no more.
Why, I've eat none yet.
Nor shalt not till necessity be served.
To what kind should this cock come of?
Oh, art thou thus bolden, man, by thy distress, or else a rude despiser of good manners, that in civility thou seemst so empty?
You touched my vein at first, the thorny point of bare distress, hast ta'en me from the show of smooth civility. Yet am I inbred and know some nurture. But forbear, I say, he dies that touches any of this fruit till I and my affairs are answered.
And you will not be answered with reason. I must die.
What would you have? Your gentleness shall force more than your force move us to gentleness.
I almost die for food, and let me have it.
Sit down and feed, and welcome to our table.
Speak you so gently. Pardon me, I pray you. I thought that all things had been as average here, and therefore put I on the countenance of stern commandment. If ever you have looked on better days, if ever been where bells have knolled to church, if ever sat at any good man's feast, if ever from your eyelids wiped a tear, and know what 'tis to pity and be pitied, let gentleness my strong enforcement be, in the which hope I'd blush and hide my sword.
True it is that we have seen better days, and have with holy bell been known to church, and sat at good men's feasts, and wiped our eyes of drops that sacred pity hath engendered. And therefore sit you down in gentleness, and take upon command what help we have, and that to your wanting may be ministered.
Then but forbear your food a little while, whilst, like a doe, I go to find my fawn and give it food. There is an old poor man, who after me hath many a weary step limped in pure love, till he be first sufficed, oppressed with two weak evils, age and hunger. I will not touch a bit.
Go find him out, and we will nothing waste till you return.
I thank ye, and be blessed for your good comfort.
Thou seest we are not all alone unhappy. This wide and universal theater presents more woeful pageants than the scene wherein we play in.
All the world's a stage, and all the men and women merely players. They have their exits and their entrances. And one man in his time plays many parts.
his axe being 7 ages. At first the infant, mewling and puking in the nurse's arms. And then the whining schoolboy with his satchel and shining morning face creeping like snail unwillingly to school. And then the lover, sighing like furnace with a woeful ballad made to his mistress' eyebrow. Then a soldier, full of strange oaths and bearded like the pard, jealous and honor, sudden and quick and quirl, seeking the bubble, reputation e'en in the cannon's mouth. And then the justice, in fair round belly with good capon lined, with eyes severe and beard of formal cut, full of wise saws and sudden instances. And so he plays his part. The sixth age shifts into the lean and slippered pantaloon, with spectacles on nose and pouch on side, his youthful hose well saved, a world too wide for his shrunk shank, and his big manly voice turning again toward childish treble, pipes and whistles in his sound. Last scene of all that ends this strange eventful history is second childishness and mere oblivion. Son's teeth. Son's eyes. Son's taste. Son's everything.
Welcome. Set down your venerable brother and let him feed.
I thank you most for him.
So had you need. I scarce can speak to thank you for myself.
Welcome, fall too. I will not trouble you as yet to question you about your fortunes. Give us some music, and you, good cousin, sing.
Blow, blow, thou winter wind, thou art not so unkind as man's ingratitude, that tooth is not so keen. Because thou art not seen, although thy breath be rude. Hi-ho, sing hi-ho unto the green holly. Most friendship is feigning, most loving mere folly. In hi-ho lolly, his life is most jolly. Freeze, freeze, thou bitter sky, that dost not bite so nigh. As benefits for God, though thou the waters warp, thy sting is not so sharp. As friend remembered not.
If that you were the good Sir Roland's son, as you have whispered faithfully you were, and as mine eye doth his effigies witness, most truly limned and living in your face, be truly welcome hither. I am the duke that loved your father. The residue of your fortune, go to my cave and tell me. A good old man, thou art right welcome as thy master is. Support him by the arm. Give me your hand and let me all your fortunes understand.
Not seen him since? Sir, sir, that cannot be. Find out thy brother, wheresoe'er he is. Seek him with candle. Bring him dead or living within this 12 months, or turn thou no more to seek a living in our territory. Thy lands and all things that thou dost call thine worth seizure do we seize into our hands, till thou canst quit thee by thy brother's mouth of what we think against thee.
Oh, that your highness knew my heart in this. I never loved my brother in my life.
More villain thou. Well, push him out of doors. Let my officers of such a nature make an extent upon his house and lands. Do this expediently, and turn him going.
Hang there, my verse, in witness of my love, and thou, thrice crowned queen of night, survey with thy chaste eye from thy pale sphere above thy huntress name that my full life doth sway. Oh, Rosalind, these trees shall be my books, and in their box my thoughts are character, that every eye which in this forest looks shall see thy virtue witnessed everywhere. Run, run, Orlando, carve on every tree the fair, the chaste, and unexpressive she.
And how like you this shepherd's life, Master Touchstone?
Truly, shepherd, in respect of itself, it is a good life, but in respect that it is a shepherd's life, it is not. In respect that it is solitary, I like it very well, but in respect that it is private, it is a very vile life. Now, in respect it is in the fields, it pleaseth me well. But in respect that it is not in the court, it is tedious. As it is a spare life, look you, it fits my humor well, but as there is no more plenty in it, it goes much against my stomach. Hast any philosophy in thee, shepherd?
No more but that I know the more one sickens, the worse at ease he is, and that he that wants money, means, and content is without three good friends, that the property of rain is to wet and fire to burn. That good pasture makes fat sheep, and that a great cause of the night is lack of the sun. That he that hath learned no wit by nature, no art, may complain of good breeding, or comes of a very dull kindred.
Such a one is a natural philosopher. Wast ever in court, shepherd?
No, truly.
Then thou art damned.
Nay, I hope.
Truly, but thou art damned like an ill-roasted egg, all on one side.
For not being at court, your reason.
Why, if thou never wast at court, thou never sawest good manners. And if thou never sawest good manners, then thy manners must be wicked. And wickedness is sin, and sin is damnation. Thou art in a parlous state, shepherd.
Not a whit, Touchstone. Those that are good manners at the court are as ridiculous in the country as the behavior of the country is most mockable at the court. You told me you salute not at the court, but you kiss your hands. That courtesy would be uncleanly if courtiers were shepherds.
Instance, briefly. Come, instance.
While we are still handling our ewes and their fells, you know, greasy.
Why do not your courtiers' hands sweat? And is not the grease of a mutton as wholesome as the sweat of a man? Shallow, shallow. A better instance, I say. Come.
You have too courtly a wit for me. I'll rest.
Wilt thou rest, damned? God help thee, shallow man. God make incision in thee. Thou art raw.
Sir, I am a true laborer. I earn that I eat, get that I wear. Owe no man's hate. Envy no man's happiness, glad of other men's good, content with my harm, and the greatest of my pride is to see my ewes graze and my lambs suck.
That is another simple sin in you, to bring the ewes and the rams together, and to offer to get your living by the copulation of cattle, and to be bawd to a bellwether, and to betray a she-lamb to a of a 12-month to a crooked-pated old cuckoldly ram, out of all reasonable match. If thou beest not damned for this, the devil himself will have no shepherds. I cannot see how else thou shouldst escape.
Here comes young Master Ganymede, my new mistress's brother.
From the east to western end, no jewel is like Rosalind. Her worth being mounted on the wind, through all the world bears Rosalind. All the pictures fairest lined are but black to Rosalind. Let no fair be kept in mind but the fair of Rosalind.
I'll rhyme you so 8 years together, dinners and suppers and sleeping hours excepted. It is the right butter women's rank to market.
Out, fool.
For a taste, if a hart do lack a hind, let him seek out Rosalind. If the cat will after kind, so be sure will Rosalind.
Winter garments must be lined, so must slender Rosalind. Sweetest nut hath sourest rind, such a nut is Rosalind. He that sweetest rose will find must find love's prick and Rosalind. This is the very false gallop of verses. Why do you infect yourself with them?
Peace, you dull fool. I found them on a tree.
Truly, the tree yields bad fruit.
Peace. Here comes my sister reading. Stand aside.
Why should this a desert be? For it is unpeopled. No. Tongues I'll hang on every tree, but upon the fairest boughs, or at every sentence end, will I Rosalinda write, teaching all that read to know the quintessence of every sprite, heaven would in little show. Helen's cheek, but not her heart, Cleopatra's majesty, Atalanta's better part, sad Lucretia's modesty. Heaven would that she these gifts should have, and I to live and die her slab.
Oh, most gentle Pulpiter.
How now? Back, friends! Shepherd, go off a little. Go with him, Sirrah.
Come, shepherd, let us make an honorable retreat. Though not with bag and baggage, yet with scrip and scrippage.
Didst thou hear these verses?
Oh, yes, I heard them all, and more, too.
Trow you, who hath done this?
Is it a man?
And a chain that you once wore about his neck. Change you color?
I prithee, who?
Oh, Lord, Lord! It is a hard matter for friends to meet. But mountains may be removed with earthquakes, and so encounter.
But who is it?
Is it possible?
Nay, I prithee now with most petitionary vehemence. Tell me who it is.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, and most wonderful, wonderful, and yet again wonderful, and after that, out of all hooping.
Good, my complexion. Dost thou think, though I'm comparison like a man, I have a doublet and hose in my disposition? I prithee, tell me who it is quickly, and speak apace. I would thou couldst stammer, that thou mightst pour this concealed man out of thy mouth as wine comes out of a narrow-mouthed bottle, either too much at once or none at all. I prithee, take the cork out of thy mouth that may drink thy tidings.
So you may put a man in your belly.
Is he of God's making? What manner of a man? Is his head worth a hat, or his chin worth a beard?
Nay, he hath but little beard.
Why, God will send more, if the man be thankful. Let me stay the growth of his beard, if thou delay me not the knowledge of his chin.
It is young Orlando that tripped up the wrestler's heels and your heart both in an instant.
Nay, but the devil take mocking. Speak, sad brow and true maid.
If faith, cuz, 'tis he.
Orlando?
Orlando.
Alas, the day! What shall I do with my doublet and hose? What did he when thou saw'st him? What said he? How looked he? Wherein went he? What makes him here? Did he ask for me? Where remains he? How parted he with thee? And when shalt thou see him again? Answer me in one word.
You must borrow me Gargantua's mouth first.
But doth he know that I am in this forest, and in man's apparel? Looks he as freshly as he did the day he wrestled?
I found him under a tree, like a dropped acorn.
It may well be called Jove's tree when it drops forth such fruit.
Give me audience, good madam.
Proceed.
There lay he, stretched along, like a wounded knight. He was furnished like a hunter.
Oh, ominous. He comes to kill my heart.
I would sing my song without a burden. Thou bring'st me out of tune.
Do you not know I am a woman? When I think I must speak, sweet, say on.
You bring me out. Soft! Comes he not here?
'Tis he! Slink by and note him.
I thank you for your company, but good faith, I had as lief have been myself alone.
And so had I, but yet for fashion's sake I thank you too for your society.
And God be with you. Let's meet as little as we can.
I do desire we may be better strangers.
I pray you mar no more trees with writing love songs in their barks.
I pray you mar no more of my verses with reading them ill-favoredly.
Rosalind is your love's name?
Yes, just.
I do not like her name.
There was no thought of pleasing you when she was christened.
What stature is she of?
Just as high as my heart.
You have a nimble wit. I think 'twas made of Atalanta's heels. Will you sit down with me, and we too will rail against our mistress, the world, and all our misery?
I will chide no breather in the world but myself, against whom I know most faults.
The worst fault you have is to be in love.
'Tis a fault I will not change for your best virtue. I am weary of you.
By my troth, I was seeking for a fool when I met you.
He is drowned in the brook. Look but in, and you shall see him.
By my troth, I was seeking for a fool when I met you.
Which I take to be either a fool or a cipher.
I'll tarry no longer with you. Farewell, good Signor Love.
I am glad of your departure. Adieu, good Monsieur Melancholy.
I will speak to him like a saucy lackey, and under that habit play the knave with him. Do you hear, Forester?
Very well. What would you?
I pray you, what is it o'clock?
You should ask me what time of day. There's no clock in the forest.
Then there is no true lover in the forest, else sighing every minute and groaning every hour would detect the lazy foot of time as well as a clock.
And why not the swift foot of time? Had not that been as proper?
By no means, sir. Time travels in diverse paces with diverse persons. I'll tell you who time ambles withal, who time trots withal, who time gallops withal, and who he stands still withal.
I prithee, who doth he trot withal?
Marry, he trots hard with the young maid between the contract of her marriage and the day it is solemnized. If the interim be but of 7 night, time's pace is so hard that it seems the length of a 7 year.
Who ambles time withal?
With a priest that lacks Latin, and a rich man that hath not the gout. For the one sleeps easily because he cannot study, and the other lives merrily because he feels no pain. These time ambles withal.
Who doth he gallop withal?
With a thief to the gallows. For though he goes as softly as foot can fall, he thinks himself too soon there.
Who stays it still withal?
With lawyers in the vacation, for they sleep between term and term, and then they perceive not how time moves.
Where dwell you, pretty youth?
With this shepherdess, my sister, here in the skirts of the forest, like fringe upon a petticoat.
Are you native of this place?
As the coney that you see dwell where she is kindled.
Your accent is something finer than you could purchase and so removed a dwelling.
I have been told so, of many. But, indeed, an old religious uncle of mine taught me to speak, who was in his youth an inland man, one that knew courtship too well, for there he fell in love. I have heard him read many lectures against it, and I thank God I am not a woman to be touched with so many giddy offenses as he hath generally taxed their whole sex withal.
Can you remember any of the principal evils that he laid to the charge of woman?
No, I will not cast away my physic, but on those that are sick. There is a man haunts the forest that abuses our young plants with carving Rosalind on their barks, hangs odes upon hawthorns and elegies on brambles, all forsooth deifying the name of Rosalind. If I could meet that fancy monger, I would give him some good counsel, for he seems to have the quotidian of love upon him.
I am he that is so love-shaked. I pray you, tell me your remedy.
There's none of my uncle's marks upon you. He taught me how to know a man in love.
What were his marks?
A lean cheek, which you have not. A blue eye and sunken, which you have not. An unquestionable spirit, which you have not. A beard neglected, which you have not. But I pardon you for that, for simply your having a beard is a younger brother's revenue.
Then your hose should be ungartered, your bonnet unbanded, your sleeve unbuttoned, your shoe untied, everything about you demonstrating a careless desolation. But you are no such man. You are rather point device in your accoutrements, as loving yourself than seeming the lover of any other.
Fair youth, I would I could make thee believe I love.
Me believe it? You may as soon make her that you love believe it. But in good sooth, are you he that hangs the verses on the trees, wherein Rosalind is so admired?
I swear to thee, youth, by the white hand of Rosalind, I am that he, that unfortunate he.
But are you so much in love as your rhymes speak?
Neither rhyme nor reason can express how much.
Love is merely a madness, and I tell you, deserves as well a dark house and a whip as madmen do. And the reason why they are not so punished and cured is that the lunacy is so ordinary that the whippers are in love too. Yet I profess curing it by counsel.
Did you ever cure any so?
Yes, one, and in this manner. He was to imagine me his love, his mistress, and I set him every day to woo me, at which time I would now like him, now loathe him, then entertain him, then forswear him, now weep for him, then spit at him, that I drave my suitor from his mad humor of love to a living humor of madness, which was to forswear the full stream of the world and to live in a nook merely monastic. And thus I cured him, and this way will I take upon me to wash your liver as clean as a sound sheep's heart, that there shall not be one spot of love in it.
I would not be cured, youth.
I would cure you, if you would but call me Rosalind, and come every day to my cote and woo me.
Now, by the faith of my love, I will. Tell me where it is.
Go with me to it, and I'll show it to you. And by the way, you shall tell me where in the forest you live. Will you go?
With all my heart, good youth.
Nay, you must call me Rosalind. Come, sister, will you go?
Come apace, good Audrey. I will fetch up your goats, Audrey. And how, Audrey? Am I the man yet? Doth my simple feature content you?
Your features? Lord warrant us, what features?
I am here with thee and thy goats, as the most capricious poet, honest Ovid, was among the Goths.
Oh, knowledge ill-inhabited! Worse than Jove in a thatched house.
When a man's verses cannot be understood, nor a man's good wit seconded with the forward child's understanding, it strikes a man more dead than a great reckoning in a little room. Truly, I would the gods had made thee poetical.
I do not know what poetical is. Is it honest in deed and word? Is it a true thing?
No, truly, for the truest poet is the most feigning, and lovers are given to poetry, and what they swear in poetry may be said, as lovers they do feign.
You wish, then, that the gods had made me poetical?
I do, truly, for thou swearest to me thou art honest. Now, if thou wert a poet, I might have some hope thou didst feign.
Would you not have me honest?
No, truly. Unless thou wert hard-favored, for honesty coupled to beauty is to have honey a sauce to sugar.
A material fool!
Well, I am not fair, and therefore I pray the gods make me honest.
Truly, and to cast away honesty upon a foul slut were to put good meat into an unclean dish.
I am not a slut, though I thank the gods I am foul.
Well, praised be the gods for thy foulness. Sluttishness may come hereafter. But be it as it may be, I will marry thee. And to that end, I have been with Sir Oliver Martex, the vicar of the next village, who hath promised to meet me in this place of the forest and to couple us.
I would fain see this meeting.
Well, the gods give us joy.
Amen. Here comes Sir Oliver. Sir Oliver Martex, you are well met. Will you dispatch us here under this tree, or shall we go with you to your chapel?
Is there none here to give the woman?
I will not take her on gift of any man.
Truly, she must be given,
or the marriage is not lawful.
Proceed, proceed, I'll give her.
Good even, good master, what you call it. How do you, sir? You are very well met. God ill'd you for your last company. I'm very glad to see you. Even a toy in hand here, sir. Nay, pray, be covered.
Will you be married, Motley?
As the ox hath his bow, sir, the horse his curb, and the falcon her bells, so man hath his desires. And as pigeons bill, so wedlock would be nibbling.
And will you, being a man of your breeding, be married under a bush like a beggar? Get you to church, and have a good priest that can tell you what marriage is. This fellow will but join you together as they join wainscot. Then one of you will prove a shrunk panel and like green timber warp. Warp!
I am not in the mind, but I were better to be married of him than of another, for he is not like to marry me well, and not being married, it will be a good excuse for me hereafter to leave my wife.
Go thou with me, and let me counsel thee.
Come, sweet Audrey! We must be married, or we must live in bawdry. Mm? Farewell, good Master Oliver. Not...
Never talk to me. I will weep.
Do, I prithee. But yet have the grace to consider that tears do not become a man.
But have I not cause to weep?
As good cause as one would desire, therefore weep.
His very hair is of the dissembling color.
Something browner than Judas's, Mary. His kisses are Judas's own children.
In faith, his hair is of a good color.
An excellent color. Your chestnut was ever the only color.
And his kissing is as full of sanctity as the touch of holy bread.
The very ice of chastity is in them.
But why did he swear he would come this morning, and comes not?
Nay, certainly, there is no truth in him.
Do you think so?
Yes. I think he is not a pickpurse nor a horse stealer, but for his verity and love, I do think him as concave as a covered goblet or a worm-eaten net.
Not true in love?
Yes, when he is in, but I think he is not in.
You have heard him swear downright he was.
Was is not is. He attends here in the forest on the Duke, your father.
I met the Duke yesterday, and had much question with him. He asked me of what parentage I was. I told him, of as good as he. So he laughed and let me go. But what talk we of fathers when there is such a man as Orlando?
Oh, that's a brave man. He writes brave verses, speaks brave words, swears brave oaths, and breaks them bravely. Who comes here?
Sweet Phoebe, do not scorn me. Do not, Phoebe. Say that you love me not, but say not so in bitterness. The common executioner, whose heart the accustomed sight of death makes hard, falls not the axe upon the humbled neck, but first begs pardon. Will you sterner be than he that dies and lives by bloody drops?
I would not be thy executioner. I fly thee, for I would not injure thee. That tells me there is murder in mine eye. 'Tis pretty sure and very probable that eyes that are the frailest and softest things, who shut their coward gates on atomies, should be called tyrants, butchers, murderers. Now I do frown on thee with all my heart, and if mine eyes can wound, now let them kill thee. Now counterfeit to swoon. Why now fall down? Or if thou canst not, oh ho, for shame, for shame. Lie not to say mine eyes are murderers. Now show the wound mine eye hath made in thee. Scratch thee but with a pin, and there remains some scar of it. But now mine eyes, which I have darted at thee, hurt thee not. Nor, I am sure, there is no force in eyes that can do hurt.
Oh, dear Phoebe, as that ever may be near, you meet in some fresh cheek the power of fancy, then shall you know the wounds invisible that love's keen arrows make.
But till that time, come not thou near me. And when that time comes, afflict me with thy mocks, pity me not, as till that time I shall not pity thee.
And why, I pray you? Who might be your mother that you insult, exult, and all at once over the wretched? What, though you have no beauty, must you therefore be proud and pitiless? Why, what means this? Why do you look on me? I see no more in you than the ordinary of nature's sail work. Odds my little life, I think she means to tangle my eyes too. No, faith, proud mistress, hope not after it. 'Tis not your inky brows, your black silk hair, your bugle eyeballs, nor your cheek of cream that can entame my spirits to your worship. You foolish shepherd, wherefore do you follow her like foggy south puffing with wind and rain? You are 1,000 times a properer man than she a woman. 'Tis such fools as you that makes the world full of ill-favored children. 'Tis not her glass, but you that flatters her, and out of you she sees herself more proper than any of her lineaments can show her. But, mistress, know yourself. Down on your knees and thank heaven, fasting for a good man's love. For I must tell you, friendly in your ear, sell when you can. You are not for all markets. Cry the man mercy. Love him. Take his offer. Foul is most foul, being foul to be a scoffer. So take her to thee, shepherd. Fare you well.
Sweet youth, I pray you, chide a year together. I had rather hear you chide than this man woo.
I'll saucer with bitter words. Why look you so upon me?
For no ill will I bear you.
I pray you, do not fall in love with me, for I am falser than vows made in wine. Besides, I like you not. If you will know my house, 'tis at the Tuft of Olives here hard by. Will you go, sister? Shepherd, ply her hard. Come, sister. Shepherdess, look on him better and be not proud. Though all the world could see, none could be so abused in sight as he. Come to our flock.
Dear shepherd, now I find thy saw of might. Whoever loved that loved not at first sight?
Sweet Phoebe!
Ha! What sayest thou, Sylvia?
Sweet Phoebe, pity me!
Why, I am sorry for thee, gentle Sylvia.
Wherefore sorrow is, relief would be. If you do sorrow at my grief and love, by giving love, your sorrow and my grief were both exterminated.
Thou hast my love.
Is not that neighborly?
I would have you!
Why, that were covetousness. Silvius, the time was that I hated thee, and yet it is not that I bear thee love. But since that thou canst talk of love so well, thy company, which erst was irksome to me, I will endure, and I'll employ thee too. But do not look for further recompense than thine own gladness that thou art employed.
Oh, so holy and so perfect is my love that I in such a poverty of grace that I shall think it a most plenteous crop to glean the broken ears after the man that the main harvest reaps.
Knowest thou the youth that spoke to me erewhile?
Not very well, but I met him oft.
Think not I love him, though I ask for him. 'Tis but a peevish boy, yet he talks well. But what care I for words? Yet words do well when he that speaks them pleases those that hear. It is a pretty youth, not very pretty. But sure, he's proud, and yet his pride becomes him. He'll make a proper man. The best thing in him is his complexion. The faster than his tongue did make offense, his eye did heal it up. He is not very tall, yet for his years he's tall. His leg is but so-so, yet 'tis well. There was a pretty redness in his lip, and a little riper and more lusty red than that mixed in his cheek. 'Twas just the difference between the constant red and mingled damask. There be some women, Silvius, had they marked him in parcels as I did, would have gone near to fall in love with him. But for my part, I love him not, nor hate him not. And yet I have more cause to hate him than to love him. For what had he to do to chide at me? He said mine eyes were black, and my hair was black, and now I am remembered scorned at me. I marvel why I answer not again. But that's all one. Omittance is no quittance. I'll write him a very taunting letter, and thou shalt bear it. Wilt thou, Silvius?
Feed me with all my heart.
I'll write it straight. The matter's in my head and in my heart. I will be bitter with him and passing short. Go with me, Silvius.
I prithee, pretty youth, let me be better acquainted with thee.
They say you are a melancholy fellow.
I am so. I do love it better than laughing.
Those that are in extremity of either are abominable fellows, and betray themselves to every modern censure worse than drunkards.
Why, 'tis good to be sad and say nothing.
Why then, 'tis good to be a post.
I have neither the scholar's melancholy, which is emulation, nor the musician's, which is fantastical, nor the courtier's, which is proud, nor the soldier's, which is ambitious, nor the lawyer's, which is politic, nor the lady's, which is nice, nor the lover's, which is all these. But it is a melancholy of mine own, compounded of many simples, extracted from many objects, and indeed the sundry's contemplation of my travels, in which my often rumination wraps me in a most humorous sadness.
A traveller! By my faith, you have great reason to be sad. I fear you have sold your own lands to see other men's. Then to have seen much and to have nothing is to have rich eyes and poor hands.
Yes, I have gained my experience.
And your experience makes you sad. I had rather have a fool to make me merry than experience to make me sad, and to travel for it, too.
Good day and happiness, dear Rosalind.
Nay, then, God be with you. And you talk in blank verse.
Farewell, Monsieur Traveller. Why, how now, Orlando? Where have you been all this while? You, a lover, and you serve me such another trick. Never come in my sight more.
My fair Rosalind, I come within an hour of my promise.
Break an hour's promise in love?
Pardon me, dear Rosalind.
Nay, and you be so tardy, never come more in my sight. I had as lief be wooed of a snail.
Of a snail?
Aye, of a snail. For though he comes slowly, he carries his house on his head. A better jointure, I think, than you make a woman. Besides, he brings his destiny with him.
What's that?
Why, horns.
Virtue is no horn maker, and my Rosalind is virtuous.
And I am your Rosalind.
It pleases him to call you so, but he hath a Rosalind of a better lear than you.
Come, woo me. Woo me, for now I'm in a holiday humor and like enough to consent. What would you say to me now, an I were your very, very Rosalind?
I would kiss before I spoke.
Nay, you were better speak first, and when you were graveled for lack of matter, you might take occasion to kiss. Very good orators, when they are out, they will spit. And for lovers lacking, God warn us, matter, the cleanliest shift is to kiss.
How if the kiss be denied?
Then she puts you to entreaty, and there begins new matter.
Who could be out, being before his beloved mistress?
Marry, that should you. If I were your mistress, or I should think my honesty ranker than my wit.
What of my suit?
Not out of your apparel, and yet out of your suit. Am not I your Rosalind?
I take some joy to say you are, because I would be talking of her.
Well, in her person, I say, I will not have you.
And in mine own person, I die.
No, faith, die by attorney. The poor world is almost 6,000 years old, and in all this time there was not any man died in his own person. Men have died from time to time, and worms have eaten them, but not for love.
I would not have my right Rosalind of this mind, for I protest her frown might kill me.
By this hand, it will not kill a fly. But come, now I will be your Rosalind in a more coming-on disposition, and ask me what you will, I will grant it.
Then love me, Rosalind.
Yes, faith. Will I, Fridays and Saturdays and all.
Wilt thou have me?
Aye, and 20 such.
What sayest thou?
Are you not good?
I hope so.
Why then, can one desire too much of a good thing? Come, sister, you shall be the priest and marry us. Give me your hand, Orlando. What do you say, sister?
Pray thee, marry us.
I cannot say the words.
You must begin. Will you, Orlando?
Don't you? Will you, Orlando, have to wife this Rosalind?
I will.
Aye, but when?
Why now, as fast as she can marry us.
Then you must say, I take thee, Rosalind, for wife.
I take thee, Rosalind, for wife.
I might ask you for your commission, but I do take thee, Orlando, for my husband. Now, tell me how long you would have her after you possessed her.
Forever and a day.
Say a day, without the ever. No, no, Orlando. Men are April when they woo, December when they wed. Maids are May when they are maids, but the sky changes when they are wives. I will be more jealous of thee than a Barbary cock-pigeon over his hen, more clamorous than a parrot against the rain, more newfangled than an ape, more giddy in my desires than a monkey. I will weep for nothing like Diana in the fountain, and I will do that when you are disposed to be merry. Like a hyena, and that when thou art inclined to sleep.
But will my Rosalind do so?
By my life, she will do as I do.
Oh, but she is wise.
Or else she could not have the wit to do this. The wiser, the waywarder. Make the doors upon a woman's wit, and it will out at the casement. Shut that, and twill out at the keyhole. Stop that, twill fly with the smoke out at the chimney.
For these 2 hours, Rosalind, I will leave thee.
Alas, dear love, I cannot lack thee 2 hours.
I must attend the Duke at dinner. By 2 o'clock I will be with thee again.
Aye, go your ways. Go your ways. I knew what you would prove. My friends told me as much, and I thought no less. That flattering tongue of yours won me. 'Tis but one cast away, and so come death. 2 o'clock is your hour.
Aye, sweet Rosalind.
By my troth, and in good earnest, and so God mend me, and by all the pretty oaths that are not dangerous, if you break one jot of your promise, or come 1 minute behind your hour, I will think you the most pathetical break promise, and the most hollow lover, and the most unworthy of her you call Rosalind, that may be chosen out of the gross band of the unfaithful. Therefore, beware my censure, and keep your promise.
With no less religion than if thou wert indeed my Rosalind. So, adieu.
Well, time is the old justice that examines all such offenders, and let time try. Adieu.
You have simply misused our sex in your love prate. We must have your doublet and hose plucked over your head and show the world what the bird hath done to her own nest.
Oh, cuz, my pretty little cuz, that thou didst know how many fathoms deep I am in love. I'll tell thee, Aliena, I cannot be out of the sight of Orlando. I'll go and find a shadow and sigh till he come.
Look who comes here.
My errand is to you, fair youth. My gentle Phoebe bid me give you this. I know not the contents, but as I guess by the stern brow and waspish action which she did use when she was writing of it, it bears an angry tenor. Pardon me, but as a guiltless messenger.
Patience herself would startle at this letter, and play the swaggerer. Bear this, bear all. She says I am not fair, that I lack manners. She calls me proud, and that she could not love me, were man as rare as Phoenix. That's my will. Her love is not the hare that I do hunt. Why writes she so to me? Well, shepherd, well, this is a letter of your own device.
No, I protest. I know not the contents. Phoebe did write it.
Come, come, you're a fool, and turned into the extremity of love. I say she never did invent this letter. This is a man's invention, and his hand.
Sure it is hers.
Why, 'tis a boisterous and a cruel style. A style for challengers. Why, she defies me. Well, go your way to her, for I see love hath made thee a tame snake. And say this to her, that if she love me, I charge her to love thee.
And if she will not, I will never have her unless thou entreat for her. If you be a true lover, hence, and not a word, for here comes more company.
Good morrow, fair ones. Pray you, if you know, where in the purlieus of this forest stands a sheetcoat fenced about with olive trees?
West of this place, down in the neighbor bottom. The rank of osier by the murmuring stream left on your right hand brings you to the place. But at this hour the house doth keep itself. There's no one within.
Are not you the owner of the house I did inquire for?
It is no boast, being asked, to say we are.
Orlando doth commend him to you both. And to that youth he calls his Rosalind. He sends this bloody napkin. Are you he?
I am. What must we understand by this?
Some of my shame. If you will know of me what man I am, and how, and why, and where this handkerchiefer was stained.
I pray you, tell it.
When last the young Orlando parted from you, he left a promise to return again within an hour, and pacing through the forest and mark what object did present itself, under an oak whose boughs were mossed with age and high-top bald with dry antiquity, a wretched, ragged man, overgrown with hair, lay sleeping on his back, a lioness, with udders all drawn dry, lay couching, head on ground, with cat-like watch, when that the sleeping man should stir. This scene, Orlando did approach the man, and found it was his brother, his elder brother.
Oh, I have heard him speak of that same brother, and he did render him the most unnatural that lived amongst men.
And well he might do so, for well I know he was unnatural.
But to Orlando, did he leave him there, food to the sucked and hungry lioness?
Twice did he turn his back and propose so, but kindness, nobler ever than revenge, and nature, stronger than his just occasion, made him give battle to the lioness, who quickly fell before him, in which hurtling from miserable slumber, I awaked.
Are you his brother?
Wast you he rescued?
Wast you that did so oft contrive to kill him?
'Twas I, but 'tis not I do not shame to tell you what I was, since my conversion so sweetly tastes, being the thing I am.
But for the bloody napkin?
The lioness had torn some flesh away, which all this while had bled, and now he fainted, and cried in fainting upon Rosalind. Brief I recovered him, bound up his wound, and after some small space, being strong at heart, he sent me hither, stranger as I am, to tell this story, that you might excuse his broken promise, and to give this napkin, dyed in his blood, unto the shepherd youth, that he in sport doth call his Rosalind.
Oh. Why, how now, Ganymede? Sweet Ganymede!
Many will swoon when they do look on blood.
There is more in it. Cousin Ganymede!
Look, he recovers.
I were at home.
We'll lead you thither. I pray you, will you take him by the arm?
Be of good cheer, youth. You a man. You lack a man's heart.
I do so, I confess it. Ah, sirrah! A body would think this was well counterfeited. I pray you, tell your brother how well I counterfeited. Hey-ho!
Well then, take a good heart and counterfeit to be a man.
So I do. But in faith, I should have been a woman by right.
Come, you look paler and paler. Pray you draw homewards. Good sir, go with us.
We shall find a time, Audrey. Patience, gentle Audrey.
Faith, the priest was good enough for all the old gentleman saying.
A most wicked Sir Oliver, Audrey. A most vile martext. But, Audrey, there is a youth here in the forest lays claim to you.
Aye, I know who 'tis. He hath no interest in me in the world. Here comes the man you mean.
It is meat and drink to me to see a clown. By my troth, we that have good wits have much to answer for. We shall be flouting. We cannot hold.
Good even, Audrey.
God ye good even, William.
And good even to you, sir.
Good even, gentle friend. Cover thy head, cover thy head.
Ooh.
Nay, prithee, be covered. How old are you, friend?
25, sir.
A ripe age. Is thy name William?
William, sir.
A fair name. Wast born in the forest here?
Aye, sir, I thank God.
Thank God. A good answer. Art rich?
Faith, sir. So-so.
So-so is good. Very good. Very excellent good. And yet it is not. It is but so-so. Art thou wise?
Aye, sir, I have a pretty wit.
Why, thou sayest well, I do now remember a saying, the fool doth think he is wise, but the wise man knows himself to be a fool. You do love this maid?
I do, sir.
Give me your hand. Art thou learned?
No, sir.
Then learn this of me. To have is to have. For it is a figure in rhetoric that drink being poured out of a cup into a glass, by filling the one doth empty the other. For all your writers do consent that ipsy is he. Now you are not ipsy, for I am he.
Which he, sir?
He, sir, that must marry this woman. Therefore, you clown, abandon, which is in the vulgar leave, the society, which in the boorish is company, of this female, which in the common is woman, which together is abandon the society of this female, or, clown, thou perishest, or to thy better understanding diest, or, to wit, I kill thee, make thee away, translate thy life into death, thy liberty into bondage. I will deal in poison with thee, or in bastinado, or in steel. I will bend thee with thee in faction. I will o'errun thee with policy. I will kill thee 150 ways. Therefore, tremble and depart.
Do, good William.
God rest you merry, sir.
Our master and mistress seeks you. Come away, away.
Trip, Audrey, trip. Audrey, I attend.
Is it possible that on so little acquaintance you should like her? That but seeing you should love her, and loving woo, and wooing she should grant? And will you persevere to enjoy her?
Neither call the giddiness of it in question, the poverty of her, the small acquaintance, my sudden wooing, nor her sudden consenting. But say with me, I love Aliena. Say with her that she loves me. For my father's house and all the revenues that was old Sir Roland's, will I estate to you, and here live and die a shepherd.
You have my consent. Let your wedding be tomorrow. Thither will I invite the Duke and all his contented followers. Go you and prepare, Aliena. For look you, here comes my Rosalind.
God save you, brother.
And you, fair sister.
Oh, my dear Orlando, how it grieves me to see thee wear thy heart in a scarf.
It is my arm.
I thought thy heart had been wounded with the claws of a lion.
Wounded it is, but with the eyes of a lady.
Did your brother tell you how I counterfeited a swoon when he showed me your handkerchief?
Aye, and greater wonders than that.
Oh, I know where you are. Nay, 'tis true, there was never anything so sudden but the fight of two rams and Caesar's thrasonical brag of I came, saw, and overcame. For your brother and my sister no sooner met but they looked, no sooner looked but they loved, no sooner loved but they sighed, no sooner sighed but they asked one another the reason, no sooner knew the reason but they sought the remedy. They are in the very wrath of love, and they will together. Clubs cannot part them.
They shall be married tomorrow, and I will bid the Duke to the nuptial. But oh, how bitter a thing it is to look into happiness through another man's eyes.
Why then, tomorrow I cannot serve your turn for Rosalind?
I can live no longer by thinking.
I will weary you then no longer with idle talking. Know of me then, for now I speak to some purpose, that I know you are a gentleman of good conceit. Believe then, if you please, that I can do strange things. I have, since I was 3 years old, conversed with a magician, most profound in his art, and yet not damnable. If you do love Rosalind so near the heart as your gesture cries out, when your brother marries Aliena, shall you marry her? I know into what straits of fortune she is driven, and it is not impossible to me, if it appear not inconvenient to you, to set her before your eyes tomorrow, human as she is, and without any danger.
Speakest thou in sober meanings?
By my life I do, which I tender dearly, though I say I am a magician. Therefore, put you in your best array, bid your friends, for if you will be married tomorrow, you shall, and to Rosalind, if you will. Look, here comes a lover of mine, and a lover of hers.
Youth, you have done me much ungentleness to show the letter I writ you.
I care not if I have. It is my study to seem despiteful and ungentle to you. You are there followed by a faithful shepherd. Look upon him, love him. He worships you.
Good shepherd, tell this youth what 'tis to love.
It is to be all made of sighs and tears, and so am I for Phoebe.
And I for Ganymede.
And I for Rosalind.
And I for no woman.
It is to be all made of faith and service, and so am I for Phoebe.
And I for Ganymede.
And I for Rosalind.
And I for no woman.
It is to be all made of fantasy, all made of passion, and all made of wishes, all adoration, duty, and observance, all humbleness, all patience and impatience, all purity, all trial, all observance, and so am I for Phoebe.
And so am I for Ganymede.
And so am I for Rosalind.
And so am I for no woman.
If this be so, why blame you me to love you?
If this be so, why blame you me to love you?
If this be so, why blame you me to love you?
Who do you speak to? Why blame you me to love you?
To her that is not here, nor doth not hear.
Pray you, no more of this. 'Tis like the howling of Irish wolves against the moon. I will help you if I can.
Huh?
I would love you if I could.
Ah!
Tomorrow, meet me all together. I will marry you if ever I marry woman, and I'll be married tomorrow.
Woo!
I will satisfy you if ever I satisfied man, and you shall be married tomorrow. I will content you if what pleases you contents you, and you shall be married tomorrow. As you love Rosalind, meet. As you love Phoebe, meet. And as I love no woman, I'll meet. So fare you well. I have left you commands.
I'll not fail if I live.
Nor I.
Nor I.
Salutation and greeting to you all.
Good my lord, bid him welcome. This is the motley-minded gentleman that I have so often met in the forest. He has been a courtier, he swears.
If any man doubt that, let him put me to my purgation. I have trod a measure. I have flattered a lady. I have been politic with my friend, smooth with mine enemy. I have undone 3 tailors. I have had 4 quarrels, and like to have fought one.
And how was that, Dana?
Faith, we met and found the quarrel was upon the 7th cause.
How 7th cause? Good, my lord, like this fellow.
I like it very well.
God ild you, sir. I desire you of the like. I press in here, sir, amongst the rest of the country copulatives, to swear and to forswear, according as marriage binds and blood breaks.
By my faith, he is very swift and sententious.
But for the 7th cause, how did you find the quarrel on the 7th cause?
Upon a lie, 7 times removed. Bear your body more seeming, Audrey.
Oh.
As thus, sir, I did dislike the cut of a certain courtier's beard. He sent me word if I said his beard was not cut well. He was in the mind, it was. This is called the retort courteous. If I sent him word again it was not well cut, he would send me word he cut it to please himself. This is called the quip modest. If again it was not well cut, he disabled my judgment. This is called the reply churlish. If again it was not well cut, he would answer, I speak not true. This is called the reproof valiant. If again it was not well cut, he would say, I lied. This is called the countercheck quarrelsome. And so to the lie circumstantial and the lie direct.
And how oft did you say his beard was not well cut?
sir. We quarrel in print, by the book. As you have books for good manners, I will name you the degrees. The first, the retort courteous. The second, the quip modest. The third, the reply churlish. The fourth, the reproof valiant. The fifth, the countercheck quarrelsome. The sixth, the lie with circumstance. The seventh, the lie direct. All these you may avoid, but the lie direct. And you may avoid that too with an if, as if you said so, then I said so. And they shook hands and swore brothers. Your if is the only peacemaker. Much virtue in if.
Is not this a rare fellow, my lord? He's as good at anything, and yet a fool.
He uses his folly like a stalking horse, and under the presentation of that, he shoots his wit.
Then is there mirth in heaven when earthly things made even are toned together. Good Duke, receive thy daughter. Hymen from heaven brought her, yea, brought her hither, that thou mightst join her hand with his whose heart within his bosom is.
To you I give myself, for I am yours. To you I give myself, for I am yours.
If there be truth in sight, you are my daughter.
If there be truth in sight, you are my Rosalind.
If sight and shape be true, why then, my love, adieu.
I'll have no father if you be not he. I'll have no husband if you be not he. Nor ne'er wed woman if you be not she.
Peace, ho, I bar confusion. 'Tis I must make conclusion of these most strange events. Here's eight that must take hands to join in Hymen's bands, if truth holds true contents. You and you no cross shall part. You and you are heart in heart. You to his love must accord, or have a woman to your lord. You and you are sure together as the winter to foul weather. While the wedlock hymn we sing, feed yourselves with questioning, that reason wonder may diminish how thus we met and these things finish.
Under the greenwood tree, who loves to lie with me and turn his merry note unto the sweet bird's throat? Come hither, come hither, come hither, here shall he see no enemy but winter and love. Ambition shine and love to live in the sun, seeking the food he eats and pleased with what he eats. Come hither, come hither, come hither, here shall he see no enemy but winter and rough weather.
Oh, my dear niece, welcome thou art to me. Even daughter, welcome in no less degree.
I will not eat my word. Now thou art mine. Thy faith, my fancy, to thee doth combine.
Let me have audience for a word or two. I am the second son of old Sir Roland that bring these tidings to this fair assembly. Duke Frederick, hearing how that every day men of great worth resorted to this forest, addressed a mighty power which were on foot in his own conduct purposely to take his brother here and put him to the sword. And to the skirts of this wild wood he came, where meeting with an old religious man, after some question with him, was converted. Both from his enterprise and from the world, his crown bequeathing to his banished brother, and all their lands restored to them again, that were with him exiled. This to be true, I do engage my life.
Welcome, young man. Thou offerest fairly to thy brother's wedding, to one his lands withheld, and to the other a land itself at large, a potent dukedom. First, in this forest, let us do those ends that here were well begun and well begot, and after, every of this happy number that have endured shrewd days and nights with us shall share the good of our returned fortune, according to the measure of their states. Meantime, forget this new-fallen dignity and fall into our rustic revelry. Play, music! And you, brides and bridegrooms all, with measure heaped in joy to the measure's fall.
Sir, by your patience, if I heard you rightly, the Duke hath put on a religious life and thrown into neglect the pompous court.
He hath.
To him will I. Out of these convert tides there is much matter to be heard and learned. You, to your former honor, I bequeath your patience, and your virtue well deserves it. You, to a love that your true faith doth merit. You, to your land and love and great allies. You, to a long and well-deserved bed. And you, to wrangling. For thy loving voyage is but for 2 months victualled. So to your pleasures, I am far other than for dancing measures.
Stay, Jaques, stay.
To see no pastime, I. What you would have, I'll stay to know at your abandoned cave.
Proceed, proceed. We will begin these rites as we do trust their land in true delights.
It is not the fashion to see the lady the epilogue, but it is no more unhandsome than to see the lord the prologue. If it be true that good wine needs no bush, 'tis true that a good play needs no epilogue. Yet to good wine they do use good bushes, and good plays prove the better by the help of good epilogues. What a case am I in, then, that am neither a good epilogue, nor cannot insinuate with you in the behalf of a good play? I am not furnished like a beggar, therefore to beg will not become me. My way is to conjure you, and I'll begin with the women. I charge you, O women, for the love you bear to men, to like as much of this play as please you. And I charge you, O men, for the love you bear to women, as I perceive by your simpering none of you hates them, that between you and the women the play may please. If I were a woman, I would kiss as many of you as had beards that pleased me, complexions that liked me, and breaths that I defied not. And I am sure as many as have good beards or good faces or sweet breaths will, for my kind offer, when I make curtsy, bid me farewell.
And we just concluded with KUAC's Alaska Almost Live, and in partnership with Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater, the production of As You Like It. Tom Robinall, thanks for joining me today and for putting this together. What an amazing production and work you had to go through to video conference a whole play together. That was incredible.
Thank you. Yeah, it was quite the challenge, and I'm glad it turned out well. I have to give really big shout out to Flynn Luddington, who kind of jumped in and helped with all of this. She put all the sound effects in. She cut the script down. She added the transition music because our normal guy, Chris John George, has been stuck at home, who is his job as an IT specialist has been setting up people to work from home, and he's had zero time to do this. So Flynn Luddington really came in and helped us out. And the entire cast has just been great, really positive attitudes, and have rolled with it every step of the way.
I mean, the sounds of, you know, the wrestling, and that came through with the video conference audio, and you were all in separate households doing your stay-at-home mandate and still acting your hearts out. And that was really incredible.
Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun, and thank you to KUAC. I know that it was we're going back and forth and trying to figure out how to make this work, and thanks to you, and we were able to do it.
No kidding. Well, Tom, I cannot wait this summer to have you in for Alaska Live and just have a scene from Twelfth Night or two as a preview to the actual show that we all hope that we get together and that we're able to watch in person as a live audience there with Fairbanks Shakespeare Theater. Cannot wait to get together out of the virtual reality and into reality with you.
That I can't wait either. I just hope we get to see all of all the people are, you know, I call them the FST family, people out there watching us and us performing for them. That'll be something special. And thanks again to KUAC. And I can't wait to have another Alaska Live episode. That'd be fun.
Right on. Well, until then, this is KUAC's Alaska Live. I'm your host, Lori Neufeld. Support for the Alaska Live series of live music and conversation on KUAC is made possible by a grant from Design Alaska. Design Alaska, strengthening the community through support of the arts.